is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 46, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And please check out my other podcast. It's called The Past Lives Podcast, and it looks into evidence of the afterlife. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I have two parts to the episode, with the first section being an interview with Cheryl Lynn Carter about her book, Skinwalker Ranch, The Basin Files. And the second part is an interview with Tyler Transu about the documentary he made with Chris Rupert, which is called In Plain Sight, The Intelligence Community and UFOs. And Cheryl Lynn Carter is an explorer of ufology. She is a member of MUFON and CE5. She served as a consultant for Thomas Conwell's book, They Are Here, Central US UFOs. She's a psychic medium, remote viewer, a member of Project Psi, a team of psychic and forensic remote viewers responsible for rescuing missing children, assisting in shutting down human trafficking rings, and closing cold case murders. Now, Tyler Transu produces documentaries with Chris Rupert at Dockside Media. Other documentaries they've produced include The Ghosts of Gettysburg, Secrets of the Sasquatch, and Conscious Contact, Full Disclosure. So here we go with the interview with Cheryl Lynn Carter. Hi, Cheryl. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Hi. Great to be here.
So you've got this new book out, Skinwalker Ranch, The Basin Files, that I wanted to talk to you about, because Skinwalker Ranch has got such a reputation. So what do you think it is about this area that brings up so much strange stuff?
Well, I also do remote viewing, and I remote viewed to Skinwalker Ranch, and I see all kinds of things happening there. It's not one thing. There's things in the sky. There's things under the ground. I see two dimensions trying to bump into each other, possibly to merge into one. There's just all kinds of things happening. Plus spirits walking around too. So you can't really pinpoint, you know, oh, this is what it is. It's everything.
And when you say two dimensions bump into each other, is this, I suppose normally they're not bumping into each other. So is it like this is a real crux point?
Yeah. And I don't know why this is happening. I don't know if it's going to be a good thing if that happens or a bad thing. I don't know. But that does cost a lot of strange energy when it's, you know, happening like that.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just part of nature.
Could be. I've never seen that before somewhere, but it could be.
And have there been reports going back, I don't know, hundreds of years that people who lived in that area have got myths and legends and stories of things happening?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it used to be native land. And in fact, it still is native land. All are natives there. The Uinta Basin is smack dab in the middle with natives on either side of them. Yes, there's just all kinds of legends about hidden treasure in the basin part, not just the ranch. The Lost Roads Mine, the old Reynolds Gang, even the Sundance Kid, all had buried treasure around the areas.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting part of the book at the beginning when it talks about the Rhodes Gold Mine and the other things. And it's not this kind of subject matter for my podcast. I was going to ask you about it later because we're supposed to be talking about UFOs and things.
Okay.
But, you know, it still gets you interested, these kind of mysteries, and the thought that there's a whole ton of gold up there that could be mined. I mean, going back in time, you've got pictures in the book of petroglyphs. How old are they?
They think it could be back into the Fremont. That's, you know, long before the Utes and Navajos were there.
What sort of things are in the petroglyphs?
A lot of it that you see, they're showing their ceremonies. There's one that looks like a crop circle. I mean, who knows what that might be. Another one actually looks like an interdimensional beam.
And it's that thing some people criticize petroglyphs, the people that made them, and this can be all over the world, they're kind of doing symbolism and kind of fantasy figures. But then when they paint animals that were around them, they do a pretty good interpretation of animals. And so they don't think that, you know, they're just painting what they see. They're kind of carving into the rocks just everything that they see. Criticism is the weird looking people are not actually there.
Well, and they have pictures of something that might look like it's otherworldly too. It doesn't look human. It will have big eyes, maybe antennas coming out of its head. And we see this all over the world too. Similar. And they had no way of communicating with each other way back then, but yet they're all doing the same drawings.
Yeah, I think I've seen something similar in Australia that they dated like 55,000 years old.
You know, were they all visited by these people from the sky? I believe they were.
When they ask the people in Australia what they were and where they came from, they point up to the sky at the Pleiades system. And then other people around the world would also point up to the sky to the Pleiades system for these ancient petroglyphs.
I absolutely believe that. I'm actually writing a new book about all these ancient sites that have a tie to Pleiades.
So in your book, there's loads of UFO reports that you collected from all sorts of places. That must have been quite a job of investigation.
Well, I'm a member of MUFON, so it was kind of easy. I can get into MUFON reports that the average person can't get into. You have to have a membership to belong in there. And yeah, I just, all kinds of reports I loved. I went into MUFON, NORFAC. There's many places that you can actually search on the web to get different reports. You just have to go in there and just keep looking and looking. It does take you a while, but it's well worth it. You find many interesting things.
And there seems to be lots of different descriptions of the craft. It's almost like, I don't know, we look at the cars over here and the, you know, you have different manufacturers and different designs, but you don't expect to see reports of UFOs where they all look slightly different and different sizes and different colored lights.
Well, and we a lot of people assume that, you know, they're all coming from one place. Like you said, we're all different. They could be coming from different planets, different places. That's why they do look different.
There's lots of reports in the book from the 1960s, and they all seem to be typical of that era of reports that were coming in from lots of places.
Well, and I was a school teacher in the Uinta Basin. His name was Joseph Jr. Hicks. He was a school teacher at Roosevelt High School. And he taught botany. And one day he was outside with his students looking at plants. And they looked up and there was a huge craft up in the sky. They all witnessed it right in the middle of the day. And he just became so intrigued with this that he started asking all the other people in the basin, have you seen this? Have you seen it? And he actually came up with 400 stories and a lot of pictures that are in his book. That after he interviewed all these people, it's called the UFO display book.
It's amazing that so many reports come and so many people are happy to talk about it, that you'd think that that would have more impact on general society and people might start thinking, hang on, there's really something to this. But that was the 60s and people have been ridiculed then just as they are now.
Absolutely. That's why it was such a good thing that he came out with this book, because There were all these people there and they weren't talking about it because, right, you didn't want to talk about that to somebody. They might think you're crazy. And then when they all start finding out, no, we're all seeing the same things, then they want to share. And it's just great now that, you know, we have television, we have the internet, and now that everybody sees it's okay to talk about this. And I don't know that there's actually more sightings. I think there's just more people that are coming forward with what they're seeing.
Yeah, it's been going on for years and people have been experiencing this for so long. Was there a report of an alien abduction as well in your book?
This actually happened in 1959. He was a Nike missile technician and he was returning home from leave, and he's driving down Route 14 and he saw a glowing object in front of him in the sky, and he thought it was maybe a plane going to crash. So he's driving over to inspect it, and hours later, the sheriff found him laying on the ground. And there was no crash there. He's just laying on the ground. And he couldn't find his jacket for some reason. So he went back to the base and he's trying to tell him what happened. And they, you know, here you go. This guy must be crazy. So they placed him under psychiatric care at the William Beaumont Hospital. And then, okay, he's okay. He can go back to work. Well, then he left the fort without leaving and went AWOL because he was just inclined to go back to this scene where something happened. And there was his jacket. Now, they had already searched the area. His jacket was not there before, but there was his jacket now. And there was a pencil in the buttonhole with a piece of paper tightly wrapped around it where he had written notes about what he saw. Whatever he had written on there, it got him so upset that he took a match out and he burned the paper. And he found himself like in a trance. And then he woke up and just was wandering around again. Somebody came along and found him. He got arrested, returned back to the hospital. And then a month later, he went AWOL again, and he was just never seen again. So, you know, what happened to him that night?
And I think reading in the book, it was a long time, wasn't it? It was like 12 hours or something that he was missing.
Yeah.
And because there's, seems like, is it 3 or 4 military bases in Utah?
Yes. We've got Dugway Proving Ground. We've got Hill Air Force Base. NORAD is actually in Colorado. When I'm talking about the base and files, it is actually an area that includes Colorado, was the northern Colorado and the eastern part of Utah. It forms a province there. So NORAD is actually over on the Colorado side.
In the book, I read that it's Cheyenne Mountain, isn't it?
Yes.
Was it those guys? They went on a hunt and they saw some UFOs and then the whole base went into an alert and they had to rush back?
This is crazy. Yeah, that was right inside the NORAD mountain. This is actually a base that's built inside of a mountain. Now, we've all heard stuff like this before, that there were things in the mountain. This is for real. This was in 1975. It's the North American Aerospace Defense Command. It's located inside the Cheyenne Mountain Range. So these four men came off their shift and they were going to go hunting like they usually do. So they got their gear, drove over to the place, and they're having dinner by the campfire, and they saw what they thought was a shooting star. And all of a sudden there were 3 additional lights. So it wasn't a shooting star. And they would stop, change directions, move away, lined up together. And they kept watching it. And about 6 minutes later, they heard the buzzers go off at the mountain that's telling them that there was an alert. So they drove all the way back to their post, still wearing their hunting clothes, because they were part of the security team and they had to get back and report to the base. And the base was already on security option 3 until 6 a.m. And that meant UFOs were showing clear intent next to a weapon storage area. So they were admitting that there was something in the sky. So then it was all over, whatever it was went away, and they start talking about it and telling their story of what they saw, and no one believed them. And they said, you don't talk about this. We don't mention this. This didn't happen. But even though the radar operator told them he watched the UFOs for 20 minutes, and yet no reports were filed. There was nothing to be found about this. It was very hush-hush.
They were interviewed by some guys, weren't they, in suits? And I suppose they're the people that report on it and keep the reports. Everybody else has just got to keep quiet.
Yeah, they interviewed these guys. And then one of the guys went to check. I wanted to see what the report's about. And it was just nothing. Almost like one of those Men in Black things.
So the Dugway Proving Ground was very interesting. I think you're saying in the book is that there's kind of secret whispers of UFOs, alien bodies, secret underground facility in the side of the mountain?
It's very interesting how you always have UFO sightings around military installations. Yeah, Dugway Proving Ground, they do a lot of testing there of different aircrafts. And it's been said that they have a secret underground tunnel that they stored alien bodies. We don't know. That's a rumor. It's been said they do underground testing too. And in 1968, there was the Dugway sheep incident, where 6,249 sheep died because an F-4 Phantom strike aircraft was carrying 3,000 gallons of VX, which is a nerve agent. And they were doing a test, but it failed to completely empty out of the tank. So the wind carried it over the herds of sheep and down upon the new fallen snow. And when the sheep herder came out the next day, his whole flock was dead, just like that.
And that was down to the military testing nerve agents in open air. I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
Right. So how far did this go through the air? Did it also go into the Uinta Basin? You know, things travel in the air. It could very easily happen. And again, the Pentagon did a special report for the Utah senator, and he titled it "For Your Eyes Only." Again, "For Your Eyes Only."
And also, you say in the book, the Russians said that they saw a huge gamma ray burst coming from that underground base.
Yes, because there's just, like I said, there's all kinds of secret things happening, and when you do underground testing, the ground will actually light up. Like I know somebody that actually lives close to a certain place in another state, and he says he can see when they're testing underground because the ground will light up. You'll see things come out of the ground.
Oh, I see. Not that there might be an explosion underground, that they're testing something. It's,
well, there could be explosions. We don't know what the heck's causing this ground to light up and you know, come up into the air like that.
And there's a thing you talk about with Buckley Air Force Base. One of the reports says there were UFOs over it, and somebody saw two fighter jets. I think they said they came in from the right, flying low, and then they appeared to be in pursuit of the UFO.
Yeah, because there was, you know, it's another thing where I love when the military see things, you know, when the police see things, because then, you know, this is real. This is real. You know, that you know, your average person, they go, oh, I don't know if I'm going to believe this person. But when you have military, yeah, they saw one of the guys was out on the airfield, and it was nighttime, and he thought he saw a plane coming in, but they didn't have their lights on. And he thought, well, that's kind of strange. You know, it's not safe. They should be having their lights on. But no. And he's watching, and yeah, and he goes, he realized that it was not a plane. It was something that he had never seen before. And he went back inside, and he got one of the other guys, and they're all out there watching. You know, what is it? And later on, as he's telling his story, higher up people came out, and they also saw this. And again, why the UFOs tend to come over military bases.
Because we hear reports of UFOs going over nuclear weapons and switching off the missiles and things.
Yeah, are they trying to warn us? You know, people think they're trying to harm the military bases, or, you know, set off the bombs or something. And I don't believe that. I think they're trying to warn us that something's wrong in that nuclear reactor right there. And you've heard where they have shut them down. Maybe they're there to help us. Maybe something happened on their planet and they don't want it to happen on ours. They're helping us out. I believe they're friendly. I really do.
And that makes me think about the cattle mutilations that you talk about in your book. And there was a lot of them over the years in that area, wasn't there?
There still are, yes. Mostly Utah and Colorado. Yes, what are they? I mean, they have precision cuts on them that you won't find any blood. The animal organs are missing. Some people think it's the government, you know, that they did testing and they're trying to see what's going on with the animals. But why aren't they doing this to other animals? Why is it always cattle? There's been a few instances where it's been horses, but why cattle, or cattle close to humans or something? And the weird thing is other animals won't come around the carcass. Usually scavengers, you know, vultures, they right away, they're coming over, they want to eat, and they don't eat from the carcass. Why?
And you do talk about a couple of times in the book, people report sightings. I think there was a guy who was very close to his farmhouse. He saw a UFO over the top of a cow that was later found in the morning to be mutilated.
Yeah, he actually saw his cow being lifted up into the sky, into this craft. And the next morning he found it, in the field, mutilated.
It's difficult to understand it, isn't it? It could be they're taking this stuff just for food. It might be.
We don't know. It's, why only cows and horses?
Have you ever heard of a human mutilation happening?
No, I haven't.
Crop circles as well. Some crop circles turned up in that area.
I just love crop circles. And I do believe those are made from something from out of this world. Because I've really researched a lot about crop circles. And usually people see strange lights up in the sky. And the next morning, there's a crop circle right in that same area. And one of the places that it's not even in this book, it's a place around by me. This woman and her husband watched these strange lights up in the sky for about 20 minutes. And they were doing all kinds of maneuvers and they were leaving like little trails behind them, almost like skywriting. And she had to go back home and draw a picture of what she was seeing up in the sky. And the next morning, the neighbor found a crop circle in her field, and it looked exactly like her drawing.
And I've heard over here, because I'm on the south coast of England, close to Wiltshire, where there's, you know, a lot of crop circles.
Okay, yeah.
I heard that there are some guys that go out and do it.
Yeah.
And there was one guy was talking about he had this idea in a dream for a really great design. He drew it out, and he was going out there that night to do it with his buddies, and they were going to do the crop circle, and they came across another crew who were doing a crop circle. They compared their designs and they were exactly the same, and they hadn't told the other guys what they were doing, and it was like both the teams had some kind of download for this design.
Was it a sacred geometry design? That's what most of these are.
Yeah, I don't know what the design was, but it was interesting to me that he got it in a dream and they got it somehow.
And inside the crop circles, there's a certain vibration. The plants aren't just laying over. They have taken instruments. There's actual sound inside the crop circle. So if somebody faked making a crop circle, it's not going to have all those characteristics to it.
As I've heard that the crops are kind of, it's like they've been microwaved, like in a microwave oven, and there's micro bursts within the stems. And the way they fold over is weird.
But yet the plant isn't destroyed. It's just one part where the microwave hit.
And you've had lots of experiences throughout your life, haven't you? You're psychic, and you do remote viewing. Could you tell us about your remote viewing? Do you do missing person cases?
Yes, I do work on missing person cases. There's a group of us, and that's what we do. Mostly we try to work on looking for missing children, but the really strange thing is when we do find a child, which could be anywhere from, 4 years old to 18, I would call children. And if you find someone, sometimes you find several and find out that they were part of a human trafficking ring. So you've done even better. You've brought a lot of children home.
And do you find that if you work with the law enforcement, that some of them just don't accept you, or they'll accept you, but they're kind of like, no, don't tell anybody you're working with us?
Oh, there's some that absolutely do not believe in psychic mediums. So when you try to give them information, they don't want to hear it. Like I was so upset one time. I was going back to visit my sister, and she told me there was this woman missing, and I started having visions of where this woman was. And so I got to the next state, and I called the police. I just called them myself, and I said, she's by a sign that says water. And he says, there's no water there. I said, no, she's by a sign that says water. And he kept saying, there's no water. I said, I know that. I said, there's a sign that says water. I says, but she's face down in a ditch, and she can't really show me where she is. I'm just seeing the word water. And he just kind of blew me off. And finally, they did find her, and she was face down in a ditch in a little country town right next to the water tower. But they could have found her a lot sooner if they would have listened to me, which is frustrating sometimes.
And have you ever done remote viewing to look at UFOs?
I have never remote viewed into a UFO. I hear people that do that. I don't know if that would be a good idea. That'd be kind of scary.
Yeah, you might wonder if the ETs are telepathic in some way. They might know that you're remote viewing them.
I did have a weird strange thing happen. I remote viewed the Skinwalker Ranch one time, and you know, the old hitchhiker effect. Well, something followed me home. Now, I was never actually there physically, but I guess when you remote view, you're kind of there physically. And all of a sudden, one day, I saw like a shadow figure on my left. And then I realized it wasn't a shadow figure. It was something standing in the shadows. And it had huge eyes. And I go, oh, boy. And all of a sudden, it started downloading binary code into my brain. Now, you think I'm crazy. And I said, stop, stop. And they go, no, it's okay. And it was coming down so fast, I couldn't write it down. I don't know what it was. And I says, what is this? And they says, you'll know when you get here. Okay. So I don't feel any more enlightened. I don't feel bad. It didn't feel like it was something evil. So last September, I got to go down by the gates by the ranch. And when I got out of the truck, I heard the same voice say, pick up that rock. And I laughed because we're standing on a gravel road. I says, oh, my alien has a sense of humor. So I saw this oval-shaped rock, and it was flat, not as big as the palm of your hand. I said, well, that's different. So I picked it up, and the voice said, not that one. I'm laughing, no, sense of humor, okay. So I put it in my pockets, I give it to a friend, and I found another one, and I picked it up, and it started vibrating in my hand. It's a rock. How can a rock vibrate? And the voice said, the binary code has been activated. Okay, I still don't know what this means. I still don't feel different, but obviously something is in me now.
Okay, so it's not like you've noticed your remote viewings getting a lot better or anything like that?
No, I don't know. You know, what am I supposed to know about the ranch? Is this part of this? I feel like they are from the ranch. Like I said, there are many things there, but I felt they were interdimensional, not up in the sky, but there can be all kinds of things in different dimensions.
What is Project Psi?
That is the group that I belong to where we look for missing people. At one time, we actually worked on cold cases. We don't do too many cold cases anymore, but we do. We look for missing people. I said mostly children at the time now.
And did you do any kind of research as part of Project Psi?
Not really. We just, I do a lot of remote viewing to look for missing people. We'll get a picture of the person, and then all of a sudden I'm trying to see where they were at the last time. Who were they with? You know, are they still alive? That's our first thing that we always come up with. Are they alive or are they not? And I have a software program that the police use. It's a composite drawing where you can make faces. And I've done that a lot. I go, this person is with this man, or this man killed them. And we send that stuff to the police. And when they caught these guys, I mean, it was spot on my composite drawing to the actual picture of who the man was.
Well, that should show the police that, you know, you guys can really do this stuff.
Well, I said there's some offices that they really enjoy working with us, you know, and then there's some that don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually worked with the FBI on one case. He says, I work with psychics all the time. Well, see, that's good. Any kind of clues that you get in a situation are helpful.
And have you had your own UFO experiences?
Yes, I was just driving down the street in my town a few years ago. Oh, many years ago. It's before I had a phone with a camera on it. And I looked up at the sky. It was a clear, clear day, no clouds. And all of a sudden, the sky opened up like a portal. I don't know what you want to call it. The sky opened up and this silver disc-shaped craft came up. And I couldn't tell if there were any lights because it was daytime. If there were lights, they probably weren't using them at that time. And I couldn't take my eyes off it. And I'm looking around, why is no one else seeing this? You know, it was so big. Why is no one seeing this? And all of a sudden, everything around me just stopped. So I don't know what happened to me for a few minutes. And then everything started moving again. And the craft went back into the sky and it just closed up. I've also seen, I don't want to call them light rods because we do see rods up in the sky. This was actually like a bar of light. At first, I thought it was the morning sun when I was driving to work. And I said, no, the sun's over on the other side. And it was like a big rod illuminated, but you could see it wasn't any kind of structure. It was just light. And I'm watching it, and it started rotating to the 3 o'clock position. And of course, I didn't have a camera. I always carry my cameras now. And I watched it for a few minutes. Then it rotated back up to 12, and then it turned off. Now, I have seen this 3 times going down the same road in the morning. Another time, the light appeared up on the right side, and then over on the left side, I saw another light, identical, and it broke up into 2, and then they both started rotating to the 3 o'clock position again. After a few minutes, they went back to 12 o'clock. The one on the left side merged back into 1, and then all the lights turned off at the same time. I have no idea what that is.
Do you think they were doing this specifically for you? They wanted to show you something.
Yeah, it wasn't a craft, it was light.
And like the craft, the portal craft.
Oh, that was amazing.
They were doing that just for you, to show you almost to...
Oh, if only I had a camera, that was amazing. Oh my gosh.
But isn't there a thing, sometimes people see UFOs, they have a camera, and it just doesn't occur to them to take a picture. And it's almost like the ETs are switching off that part of their brain.
Well, I says when I'm looking at those lights in the sky, I'm going to work, and all I'm thinking of, well, I don't want to be late for work. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? One time I did pull over and try to take a picture. It was kind of fuzzy because it was on my cell phone, but I did get a picture of one. I said, I swear, no matter where I'm going now, I'll be late. If I see something, I'm stopping and taking pictures.
And there's some interesting pictures in your book as well, some photographs of weird sort of lights in the sky, but it's a bit more than just a light, isn't it?
Yeah, I think like the one guy that was got quite a few photos, it did look like portals opening or something. It was with all these different edges and light around it. It wasn't a craft either. You know, so what was he capturing? That wasn't what mine looked like. Mine looked like just like the sky tore open. Like you tore a piece of fabric open. It was very strange how it opened up.
And when it opened up, what could you see through the gap? Was it like a star field, like it was nighttime, or was it just the blue sky?
I just saw that there was a tear and this craft came out. And maybe I could have seen in there, but all I could do was keep my eyes on that craft. It's like maybe it didn't want me to see what was inside that hole. I don't remember looking in there.
Well, it's been fantastic talking to you, and it was great to talk about the book and everything else we've talked about. And I'll put links to the books and your website in the show notes.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so now we move on to the second part of this episode. This is the interview with Tyler Transu about his documentary that he made with Chris Rupert, and it's called In Plain Sight: The Intelligence Community and UFOs. Hi, Tyler. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Absolutely, Simon. Thank you so much for having me on. Love coming on here and talking about the awesome paranormal documentaries DocSide Media is cranking out. So thank you so much for having me back.
So we're going to talk about the new documentary. It's called In Plain Sight: The Intelligence Community and UFOs. So how is it that this one came together? What was the idea?
Man, great question. Let's see. So the first doc was Conscious Contact, Full Disclosure, about aliens, UFOs, consciousness, telepathy, experiencers, that type of thing. Then we did The Ghost of Gettysburg. We followed that up with Secrets of the Sasquatch, which came out here in July, July 5th, I believe. And so now we're back to aliens and UFOs. And with In Plain Sight, The Intelligence Community and UFOs. And that's releasing October 18th on Amazon, iTunes, Apple TV, Google Play, PlayStation, and Microsoft. So it's available on a lot of platforms. And the way it came together was just interested in the topic of extraterrestrials, UFOs, this type of thing. I believe the universe is probably a lot bigger and more intricate than we understand at this point in time. And I happened to see John Ramirez, who was a retired CIA officer. I saw that he was doing some different interviews and talks with different ufology people on YouTube and whatnot, and was just saying some really interesting things. I mean, he had worked in the CIA. He got like the, I don't quite remember the medal he received, but it was like for like 25 years of, you know, great service or whatever. And so, I just reached out to him. He was talking about alien hybrids and things of that nature. And I'm like, oh, dude, I'm super fascinated. I would love to get an interview with this guy. And I reached out to him and he was super accommodating. I was like, hey, man, yeah, I'd love to fly out to you and sit down with you and do an interview. And he was like, yeah, sure. And we set up the date, and man, I think I had filmed that actually, I want to say like back in January, so like 9 months ago. And he was the first interview that we got for the doc.
It's fascinating what he says about when he was the intelligence officer, he was kind of tasked with watching what the Russians are doing with their nuclear weapons and their radar. And this was decades ago, wasn't it? In the Cold War.
Correct. Correct. And so I loved hearing that part of his story that right, he's doing this intelligence gathering on aircraft and stuff, satellites, et cetera, moving through Russian airspace. And he ends up right seeing these UFOs, you know, in like the data that he's looking at, and through different means of intelligence gathering, et cetera, you know, he's able to rule out that it's not, you know, it's not Russian made. You know, they're not aware of what these things are. So what a fascinating, yeah, just what a fascinating life, man, I just can't imagine being involved in something like that.
Yeah, because he talks about the Russians going into a high state of readiness because they see something fast moving over the North Pole, and they don't know if it's like, you know, you guys in America have launched weapons or something. And if the Russians couldn't work out what these fast things were, and you guys didn't send them over. So it's just interesting, you know, that the Russians were really looking into this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, which is just, it's neat how... Well, they were observing that type of thing right back in the 80s and 90s or whatever. And, you know, fast forward, here we are in 2022, and there's reports coming out of, you know, these UFOs being spotted over like Ukraine, you know, during this war and conflict. And same deal, you know, the Russians are saying it isn't theirs, Ukraine, US, everybody's saying it's not theirs. So, man, yeah, it's just fascinating times that we live in, really, and apparently have been living in for quite some time. Because, yeah, John's talking about seeing this stuff, yeah, back in the 80s.
And so how did you meet up with Richard Doty?
Man, so that was, so for In Plain Sight, the Intelligence Community and UFOs, we have retired CIA officer John Ramirez, former Air Force Office of Special Investigations Counterintelligence Officer Richard Doty. We've got Eric Mintel, who's an experiencer and investigator. We have Roswell author and expert Tom Carey. And then we have MUFON field investigator Jesse Peak. And so Richard Doty came about as... he was the last interview to get, and we had the other four, and I kept telling Chris, like, man, I feel it. We're going to, like, we'll just get the person we need. I will keep asking people, and this, you know, this person, this interview will materialize. And yeah, it was wild how somebody else had actually reached out to me. Somebody who's interested in this topic, and I presume they are friends with Richard Doty, and they, yeah, somehow helped facilitate linking me into Richard Doty. I guess he had seen some of the trailers we had cut from the other interviews. Said, wow, yeah, this looks great, man. I would love to sit down and be a part of this. I was like, oh, dude, this is perfect. This is perfect. So, flew out and interviewed him. And he is just, you know, everybody is entitled to their own opinion. You know, Richard, well, he was a counterintelligence officer, right? So he was tasked with maybe putting out some disinformation. Basically, he talked about in the interview how, you know, if somebody had seen something that was secret U.S. tech and the U.S. knew that it was secret U.S. tech, they would direct those people to believing that it was, you know, maybe of extraterrestrial origin, that it was a UFO and that it was not U.S. tech. And then on the flip side, they would, if somebody saw a UFO and the U.S. could rule out that it was, you know, it wasn't U.S. tech and it was indeed a UFO, they would try and persuade those people to believe that what they saw was not a UFO and that it was actually U.S. tech and that they should keep it quiet, you know, for, like be a good patriot and not spread it around. And so, man, he lived a fascinating life. And people are free to judge him however they would like. Certainly, you know, if you sign up for a job and you have a superior telling you how to, you know, whatever, that you have certain objectives you need to meet. You know, I suppose it's up to the individual to do the best job they can. My encounter with him, man, he seems very genuine and personable, very disarming. Seems like a good guy that's interested in this phenomena and knows, you know, a good deal of information about it. I feel like I'm a good judge of character. He, like I said, he seemed very genuine, but I don't know. You know, these counterintelligence officers, are they just trained to whatever, act a certain way to gain others' trust? I guess certainly a possibility, but that was not I did not feel manipulated at all or taken for a ride. I mean, yeah, he just seemed very down to earth and forthcoming.
It's interesting that he talks about the briefing that he had, which was about perhaps Roswell, where he said there were two craft, they collided in a lightning storm and bodies were recovered. And I kind of think that, well, he would have signed an NDA or something. Being in that job, that stuff's classified. It's top secret. And he's just out talking about it now, but there doesn't seem to be any comeback. Nobody's taking legal action against him because he broke an oath of secrecy.
Right. Yeah. Now, the doc hasn't aired yet, so maybe that is why. But, you know, I find that to be a very interesting story that he shares. And even states that, you know, this information, to the best of my knowledge, or, you know, I is what the government knows as a fact that this is what occurred or transpired. That, just like you said, that the two UFOs crashed during a lightning storm. And, man, so I feel like, well, man, I can't disprove that. And it's just interesting he would come out and say that, because, I mean, if it can easily be disproven, well, I feel like he's just digging his own grave, right? I mean, that's a pretty bold statement to make. I'm inclined to believe him and that's the information that was shared with him. How it doesn't violate an NDA, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe there's you know, means around that about how he received that information, you know, maybe secondhand or something like that.
Or maybe if the government takes action against him, it's like the government saying it's true, he's broken an NDA, but they don't want to confirm what he says in any way.
Correct. I think that is, yep, a very viable reason as well. Very, yep. Certainly possible.
And it's one of these things that I think intelligence does, is it's almost like he can't prove any of this is real, but we can't prove any of it is not real. And it's one of those kind of mind games that the intelligence community probably play on each other all the time.
Oh, yeah, I know. I half hate to even start rattling my brain over that stuff because it could just drive you darn near crazy. Because, yeah, it is highly fascinating that there are all these former intelligence officers spearheading this UFO movement disclosure. I mean, you've got Lou Elizondo, you've got, you know, Chris Mellon, you know, who was Department of Defense. I mean, Nick Pope, certainly right. John Ramirez, Richard Doty. It's wild that these people are the ones pushing this information and pushing for disclosure. And fair play to them. They all seem genuine. You know, none of them seem truly nefarious to me. I know there's a lot of drama and stuff going on at times with Lou Elizondo, but man, he seems like he's trying to do his best and do the right thing. And that's what it appears to me. And that's been my interaction with John Ramirez and Richard Doty as well.
I suppose with Luis Elizondo, he's got proof that he was in that job. And also the Pentagon did release those videos. It's not like he's just saying stuff and there's no videos.
Correct. So yeah, he said that stuff and been vindicated some. I know some of the other stuff, you know, that he mentions, you know, it's always interesting. Now this is going back months, but the interview where, you know, whoever it was interviewing him said, hey, you know what, how do you think the world would react if they knew what you knew? And if, you know, I think they said, can you describe it in one word? And he said, somber. That's weird, right? And it's like, well, I gotta imagine he's privy to like much more data than I am. So yeah, it's just, man, it's interesting. Probably what these guys have seen and what they know. And man, it would rearrange my reality, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I talked to, I think it was Matthew Roberts. He was a guest on my podcast and he was the intelligence officer on board the USS Roosevelt when the films came from the aircraft, and as he was the intelligence officer, he got to view them straight away. I can't remember which film it was. It was like the Go Fast ones or the Tic Tac videos or something. But I said to him, did other stuff happen that you're not allowed to talk about? And he just said, yes. And that's it. He couldn't tell me anymore.
Dude, that's wild. That's a neat synchronicity as well. As far as Matthew Roberts goes, is that I was on Deb's Data Dojo podcast a few months back, talking about, I think, Secrets of the Sasquatch, that documentary. And yeah, she ended up reaching out to me afterwards and said about, hey, I've got Matthew Roberts coming on my podcast like in the middle of August. Would you come on and co-host with me? So I did. And man, he's just a super fascinating individual. And it was wild to just hear, you know, as far as the Nimitz encounter, the stuff he saw there. And then I don't know if you've been following him since. He's put a book out and I can't remember the title.
Yeah, that's why he was on my podcast, was to talk about that book.
Yeah, is it Initiated or something like that?
Initiation.
Initiation, okay. And so, yeah, you heard his whole story about, you know, being an experiencer, you know, going on a few years after that Nimitz incident, basically stumbling upon just all this other like video UFO files and stuff that was shared on some sort of military social network kind of thing. It's crazy how the phenomena, you know, kind of like has been drawn to him, right? He just seems very logical, down to earth. You know, he wouldn't strike you as somebody, you know, really open to like woo side of things. So it was amazing how this, like I said, it was almost like this was drawn to him.
And for you as a documentary maker, do you find that this is really kind of educational for you? You're learning new stuff all the time. And is it really exciting?
Oh, man. It's the best thing in the world. I'm like doing what I love. I'm talking to all these really, really interesting people who had these amazing experiences. All of them that I've met with so far, they all seem genuine in their experience and what happened to them and what they saw or what they know. So I love it. It makes me just a much more open-minded and well-rounded individual. Man, it's allowed me to grow. I mean, I think we started Dockside Media August 17th, 2021. Here we are recording on September 17th, 2022. So, man, in 13 months, this has been awesome. I've been able to just feed my curiosity and passion for life with all these just different perspectives and experiences of others. And yeah, man, it's really been an awesome ride. And a lot of the time, it feels like, yeah, like destiny, man. Like I'm being guided along. This is insane that we've had 4 documentaries picked up for distribution here in just a little over a year. We're filming Ghosts in the Graveyard, Pure Pandemonium here October 15th. There's a ghost town here in Pennsylvania called Pandemonium, which has a wild history. And Pioneer Cemetery is the haunted cemetery in this ghost town. So we're doing a camp out there. We've got like some paranormal investigators. I already interviewed like a historian who knew all the background details on this ghost town and how it came to its demise and just some of the different people who met some really gruesome endings there. And so, yeah, I'm really excited for that. But so, yeah, this whole journey, man, it feels like fate.
And is there one of these subjects that you have a particular interest in, whether if it's UFOs or it's haunted sites or it's Sasquatch?
Man, I love it all. I like bouncing around from one to the other. I think there's a possibility, maybe, you know, that they're like all of this stuff is linked. You know, it brings me back to this idea of like, wow, well, like our reality, the world around us is a byproduct of our senses, right? And like our eyes can only see like in certain spectrums and frequencies and we can only hear in certain frequencies. So, you know, there's like a whole world around us that's like going on right now that we can't see without a doubt. You know, things of like interdimensional beings and more dimensions and just all that stuff. Yeah, I find highly fascinating. So I would never, yeah, I don't know. There's not one particular one. I like digging into just, man, the mysteries of the universe. And I think by Chris and I doing these documentaries, hopefully we inspire others to look at the world a little differently, maybe think a little differently, have compassion for others. And yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, I'm just thankful every single day that I get to do this, that this found me in life. I mean, I was a sales rep before. I just, yeah, happened to stumble into filmmaking here 6 years ago on a whim, and it was fun and just, yeah, taught myself and grew, and Chris did the same thing. So, yeah, it's insane that we're even doing this, and we hope that, yeah, we encourage and inspire others to like, dude, go follow what fires them up and do what they love.
And Chris couldn't be with us today because he's working on another film right now. Is that right?
Chris, he's got a massive heart, man. And I love the guy because he's always swinging for the fences. So he's a creative and he just feels compelled to always create. And I'll be darned if he didn't write a really great sci-fi horror feature film script called Transient. And man, he had done a bunch of like crowdfunding and stuff like that to generate funds to produce it. And they just kicked that off at the beginning of this week. And I saw some of like the still images from this, you know, from some of the footage they shot. And oh, dude, it looks amazing. I mean, if I didn't tell you it was Chris Rupert making it, when you see this thing, you would have assumed it was a Hollywood studio, you know? And so that's what Chris and I love. Like, same with the documentary filmmaking, is that, man, this is nuts that we have like consumer grade equipment. You know, it's expensive, like when you tally it all up, but people could do it with just one camera. You know, they don't need three cameras and the drone and the extra gimbal and all this stuff. But we've been able to acquire this over years of commercial projects and stuff like that. And so it's so stinking dope, man, that we can make these films with our own equipment and they look great.
And when you talk to the guests that you have on the documentaries, say Tom Carey, did you do a lot of research into Roswell before you talked to him? So you had the right questions? Did you sit down with him and maybe you're on the fence about whether Roswell happened, but afterwards you're thinking, oh, it definitely happened?
We just let Tom Carey talk. We didn't direct him a whole lot and give him too many questions. He got going and just kept going. And man, this is another, just like one of those things where it feels like something bigger than ourselves is at work in all this, because so we're filming Secrets of the Sasquatch. We have all the footage from campouts and expeditions and different experiencers we interviewed. But I kept telling Chris, like, bro, we need an anthropologist. We need to get some sort of scientific academic perspective on Sasquatch. Like, I really like that for the doc. I think it helps make it a little bit more well-rounded, a little bit more credible. And we were having trouble finding somebody. And since we just, you know, we work on multiple docs or projects at once, we don't wait to finish one. I just keep going, filming the footage and logging it. And then Chris, you know, he'll cut it together into the feature doc then. And so happened to stumble upon Tom Carey and got an interview scheduled with him for In Plain Sight, the Intelligence Community UFOs, because we saw, wow, yeah, he's this Roswell expert. Man, he's got 11 books out. He's putting out his 12th. So he's definitely going to have a lot of great just information on all these people that he interviewed and all the research he's done. And dude, during that interview for In Plain Sight, he brings up that he's, you know, has a degree in anthropology, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? When we wrap the interview, I'm like, Tom, dude, any chance you can change clothes and go sit over in this chair on the other side of the room? We'll rearrange lights and all this stuff. And could we get an interview from you on Secrets of this, like on Sasquatch? And he did it. And so it was sick, man. We got the last interview we needed for Secrets of the Sasquatch while there. And it was great. It was integral to that documentary. But as far as the Roswell stuff went, we didn't really lead him or anything. Man, we just let him talk. And the guy was just an absolute plethora of information. I mean, he's been researching this for decades and decades. And he mentions that he spoke to like over 600 first and secondhand witnesses to Roswell. I mean, think about that. That's, wow. You know, that it'd be hard enough in 2022 here doing that with like the internet and just, you know, being able to get a hold of people a lot easier. And this guy was just straight up doing that legwork, like grinding, you know, 30 years ago.
We've been talking about your documentary called In Plain Sight, The Intelligence Community and UFOs.
And man, we are looking forward to hearing what people have to say about it, man. We think it's a great, great documentary, really fascinating. We've got people talking about different things that, you know, haven't been talked about a whole lot in the UFO community. And so it's, yeah, we just think it's, there's some new exciting information that people are going to love. And it's just, it's some good brain food for sure.
Well, thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast. It's been great talking to you again.
Simon, dude, thank you so much for having us on. Absolutely love it. And man, I love what you're doing and appreciate you so much for, yeah, watching the doc, man, and having us on here to discuss it.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating what those guests had to say. It's remarkable, the stuff that's coming up.
It is. And I think it's only going to get even more interesting and fascinating. It becomes more mainstream, and we have these congressional reports, and we have these different scientists like Avi Loeb and the Galileo Project, and we've got, you know, the James Webb telescope taking these just phenomenal pictures, right, of the universe in ways that we never thought we'd be able to capture. So I think, it's only up from here, buddy.
Yeah, and thanks again. And that was an interview with Tyler Transu about the documentary he made with Chris Rupert, which is called In Plain Sight, The Intelligence Community and UFOs. And the first part of the episode was an interview with Cheryl Lynn Carter about her book, Skinwalker Ranch, The Basin Files. And if you want to hear the rest of these fascinating interviews, which is another 30 minutes, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and all released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 230 episodes. And on the Past Lives podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And I also release an extra episode of the Past Lives podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. When you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is pastlivespodcast with an underscore between each word. And on Twitter, I am at Simon G. Bown. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favorite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.